Podcast. In conversation with musicians from the UK jazz scene. And now your hosts, Rob Cope and Dan Farrant.
Hello and welcome to the second anniversary edition of the Jazz Podcast. Can you believe it, Dan?
Wow, what is that? What do you mean? What is it?
We're two years old. It's 2 years since Stan Saltzman graced us with his presence.
Is that right? Wow.
I know. Spectacular, you might say.
Who would have thought it?
I know.
We would still be going.
Yeah.
All these years later.
So how's Birmingham?
Birmingham's like Birmingham usually is. Mm-hmm. It's very cold, mm-hmm. but yeah, I quite like the centre of Birmingham. It's nice.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Nice little hang.
What's the snow situation?
No snow. There was some snow on the way up here when I was on the train.
Right.
Out the windows, but nothing in the centre. What about you? What's it like down
there? Yeah, it's very pleasant in London. I won't lie to you. I mean, it's cold, but...
I saw on the news this morning, it's minus 30 in Chicago.
I read the warning that you can't take deep breaths.
Well, yeah, your breath freezes as you breathe out.
That's pretty brutal.
And apparently, in some places, you can hear it as it drops to the ground. And you're like, you hear your breath hitting the ground. Mental.
So, Dan, let's talk about the anniversary month of the Jazz Podcast.
What are we doing to celebrate? We're getting cake.
We're going to celebrate. Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. A cake in the shape of the logo would be nice.
Yeah.
We've also got four cracking shows coming up. We're going to talk to Will Glazer and Matt Hurd in a few weeks. Also, Will's just been on Hugh Williams' show, the Improvised Music Agenda Podcast. So if you can't wait even 2 weeks for us to talk to Will, you can go and listen to that. They have a new album, Climbing in Circles, which is really nice. It's available now on Bandcamp. We're going to talk to Nishla Smith, a Manchester-based singer. She has a gig at the Vortex on the 12th of February with Rich Jones, Aaron Wood, Joe Kavanagh Braley and Johnny Hunter.
Right. 2019. Well, we better start saying the year, because, you know, if we're 2 years old, we're going to go for a bit longer.
Yeah, absolutely right. 12th of February, 2019. There, speaking of Rich Jones, his namesake on the jazz violin, Richard Jones, is also coming on the Jazz Podcast. He has a new EP out with his band Hema, which is really lovely, with Matt Smith. I listened to it this morning.
Oh, great.
Mm. And an even more iconic birthday than ours, John Merriman, 40 years old.
He's not 40. He looks early 30s at most.
No, he looks 22 to me.
Yeah, maybe a bit older than that.
Yeah.
We've seen him 22.
Maybe with makeup he could pull off early 20s, but he is a spectacularly good-looking gentleman. So today is Tony Kofi.
Tony Kofi, oh, good call.
Yeah. Yeah, so Tony gets the privilege of being our second birthday show. We're going to start...
I think we have the privilege of having Tony on, don't you mean?
The privilege is all his.
It's all ours, not his. Yeah. I think anyone has the privilege of coming on the show.
You make a compelling argument, Dan. I'm going to play you one of his tunes, The Journey.
Thank you.
Tony Kofi, welcome to the Jazz Podcast.
Oh, yes. It's been a long time coming. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, we're thrilled to have you. This is awesome. So, how are you doing?
I'm good. Been pretty busy. Doing quite a few gigs, different projects. Last year was a very, very busy year, and this year is going to be equally as busier, you know, if not busier, you know.
Yeah, you do have a lot of projects going at once. It's kind of hard to track it all down when I was doing my extensive research notes. So whereabouts do you live? Are you in London at the moment?
No, I work in London an awful lot, but I live in the sticks of Surrey.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I quite want to do that.
Yeah, it's nice. It's pretty peaceful, you know, and I get to, have some quiet time and walk in the country and, walk in the countryside. And also I get to practice a lot more.
Just because there's no neighbors to complain?
Well, the neighbors don't complain. You know, I mean, one of my neighbors, if I don't play for a couple of days, you know, she comes knocking and saying, "Didn't hear you practice. Is everything okay?"
I mean, that's beautiful.
That's a dream.
Yeah, that's a dream. That's brilliant. So, just tell us a little bit about yourself, if you'd be so kind, just in case our listeners, if we've picked up anyone who doesn't know about you already.
Oh, well, I'm not from London. I was born in Nottingham, even though I don't have the accent. And, I'm a self-taught musician that later got some theoretical tuition later on, and I'm just driven by the fact that I can play music for a living. It just really fuels me to just keep going, you know. I'm very enthusiastic about music, you know. And grew up with six brothers.
Interesting
childhood. Yeah,
where do you range in the ages of your six brothers?
Fifth. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, what made you want to, like? Did you, you know, you saying you were self taught? Did you start with the saxophone?
You know what I did? Yeah, I did. You know, I just had this kind of energetical pull towards it. You know, it was something that I think it was definitely meant to be, or music kind of like found me, but it was definitely meant to be. I have no doubt about that.
How old were you when you started?
I was 16.
Oh, okay.
So it's pretty late, because I didn't really do music in, you know, primary or secondary school, because they said I wasn't good enough. So they didn't allow me to do music. So, you know, but that's okay. I forgive them.
Wow, that's weird. So then what is that? Did you hear something and you were like, yep, you know?
Yeah. You know what? It was more of a feeling, you know?
Right.
It was more of a feeling that, you know, when I left school, you know, I tried to pursue my career as a carpenter, as a young apprentice carpenter, but, you know, things changed and I decided that, you know, I wanted to do music. You know, I just had a change of mind, you know, and I when I realized that music was what I really wanted to do, I just pursued it. That was it. I never ever looked back. I never had any regrets, any kind of second thoughts. It was, that's it. That's what I want to do for the rest of my life. I knew it from then.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So how do you start? Like, it's a really interesting path, you know, like you say, to be 16 before you start playing.
Yeah, well, you know, it wasn't easy, because obviously, you know, coming from quite a big family, you know, my parents decided that I couldn't have music lessons because, you know, they couldn't afford it, really.
It's pretty expensive, one-to-one tuition as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was because I wasn't working and, you know, and I promised my mum that this is what I was going to do and no one's going to ever change my mind. And she said, well, look, you know, take these records. You know, she had lots of vinyls, you know, jazz records. And she says, well, you can use these, you know. And I used to go to the library and read up on how to, you know, assemble a saxophone and how to get the best possible sound and how to get all the fingering. So I'd get some of the librarians to print me some, you know, diagrams out and stuff like that. And I was just like sitting there reading it and just try to, you know, put all this together. And then I started practicing and then, you know, it went from 1 hour to 3 hours a day. And then it went from 3 hours to five. And then it went from five to eight, sometimes 10, you know,
if my lips
could hold out. So I did that constantly. You know, it wasn't like there wasn't no gaps. It was a constant, you know, study of just trying to really get this instrument under my fingers. Just really try to get the saxophone thing going, you know.
Okay, so then what age are you when you start to feel like you're really getting it together then?
Oh, I think I was about 18. Yeah, I was about 18 when it really started to click into place, you know, that, hey, you know, I could really do something with this. In fact, you know, I missed this part out, that my younger brother, Freddie, he's a composer and he plays guitar and he sings. And he says, hey, Tony, you know, I've been asked to go and play at this this place for someone, like a party, you know, like a summer party. And he says, look, you know, and they'll give us some money, but I didn't know how much, you know. And he said, look, you know, you get paid and come and play with me. You know, I sing and play guitar and you play sax. And at the end of that, we got £80 each. And I was like, oh my gosh, are you kidding? Is that what happened? You just play, that's it. You just play, you get money.
That's amazing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, this is great. Okay, now I've just got to get a contingency plan together. I've just got to keep practicing. I've got to keep practicing. But at that time, I still didn't have much theory under my fingers. And then I tried to apply to some of the you know, the colleges, mm-hmm. you know, in my hometown, and they were like, well, yeah, Mr. Kofi, you know, you need some grades, you know, you need at least grade 3. And I was like, I haven't got any grades because, you know, I've not had a teacher to take me through any grades. And they said, well, you know, we can't accept you, you know. I guess that was the way things were back then. I was like, okay, well, look, you know, I'll see what I can do. And then I used to buy the Downbeat magazine, and, you know, and there was all these adverts of, you know, students being accepted into Berklee College of Music, you know, international students.
Yeah.
You know? And I applied, and, you know, one thing led to another. They asked me to send them some, demos of me playing Freestyles music. I sent it to them. They asked me to come for an audition. I went for an audition. You know, I thought I failed, but apparently, you know, I got through, and that was it. You know, that was it for the rest of my life. I went to Berklee for a while, and you know, and studied some theory. You know, I really didn't study the saxophone out there. You know, because, you know, I was aware that whatever got me there was, you know, what I'd practiced and worked on before, you know. So I decided to, you know, study theory out there.
Right.
To kind of couple it with...
Are you doing like jazz theory or...
Yes, okay. yes. You know, arranging, harmony, history of music, ear training. So they were the main subjects that I went out there and did.
Yeah.
You know, And yeah, and up to this day, I'm still self-taught.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So did you enjoy Berklee?
I did. It was amazing. You know, it was, you know, like I met some quite beautiful people out there. You know, I met Julian Joseph, who I still work with right now. You know,
yeah.
And I'm on the faculty of the Julian Joseph Jazz Academy, and also, you know, I play in his big band and in his orchestra. You know, he just did the amazing Tristan Elizalde concert at the Queen Elizabeth Hall that I was part of with the BBC Concert Orchestra. So, yeah, I met Julian out there. I met the great musician Antonio Hart and, you know, the late Roy Hargrove. So, you know, we're all there at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was... Well, that's
amazing.
It was a beautiful place to be, you know. Really.
So then, okay, what did you do when you came back to England?
Well, I came back to England. I went back to my hometown, and, you know, things didn't really work out. And I met Courtney just before, and Courtney said, you know, you should come to London. Courtney Pine.
Yeah.
And Courtney Pine said, he'd come to London. You know, I've got some people that, you know, I could put you in touch with. And he put me in touch with Gary Crosby and he put me in touch with some of the people from the Jazz Warriors. So I came to London, you know, and I joined Gary Crosby's band, the New Troupe, the first New Troupe. And I caught the tail end of the Jazz Warriors. You know,
right,
and just developed from there. And I stayed in London. I worked my butt off and just really sort of like just tried to work with some of the great musicians here in London. You know, and develop that way. And at the time, I'll be going out down to Ronnie Scott's very, very often to see people like Cedar Walton and, you know, Alvin Jones and some great, you know, names that would come there. And, you know, and all that was part of my development, just to see and be around all these great musicians and perform with them as well. You know, Ralph Moore, who's in this country at the moment, you know, I would, you know, pick his brains about, you know, about music and playing the saxophone and stuff like that. And Gary Bass used to come to London quite a lot back in the 90s. And he used to always take me under his wing and show me things. And, you know, it's fantastic.
Yeah, man, I don't even know where to go. Was there one of those things that was like, I know it's hard because this is not a very good question.
Mm-hmm.
Is it one of those experiences like particularly important amongst all of that stuff, you know, for like you ending up where you are now as a result of it?
Well, you know what? For me, I was in the right place at the right time. You know, the conditions were right. You know, I was around some great musicians that helped me, you know, get onto that ladder. And,
yeah.
And you know, I went on tour. I was able to earn some money and, you know, and I worked with the group, the Diggable Planets, you know, with Byron Waller. And then we joined us three and we went on tour and I was able to buy my instrument, meet some great people on the road. You know, I had lessons with Donald Byrd. I had lessons with Ernie Watts, Red Holloway, Ralph Moore, you know, and had a lot of conversations with people like Lou Donaldson. So I was, you know, I look at it as being in the right place at the right time, you know.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I kept practicing. I never stopped practicing. In fact, even to this day, I never stopped practicing. I just keep going, you know. I've got the same enthusiasm as I had when I was 16.
That's amazing. That, I mean, well, I guess, I don't know. A lot of people who I know who, if they start to lose that enthusiasm, they tend to get a different job and change their lives. Like, really,
yeah.
Like, because it's not that easy. So
it isn't easy. But, you know, I think for me, it's a consistency that helped, you know. And also meeting new people like Alina Brzezinska, who's kind of like made me look at the music in a different direction, you know, with her her quartet where she plays harp and, you know, and me, you know, gravitating to you know, playing more of the tenor saxophone, which is something that I'd never done until a few years ago, you know, and just working with like all kinds of musicians from all walks of life, and not just thinking that it's just about jazz, you know. I've just worked with like people across the board, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so it's all about, you know, just enjoying what you do and not thinking that it's just a job, because it's not just a job, you know. It's my life, you know.
Yeah.
It's about life.
So what pushed you into doing more tenor playing then?
Oh wow. Okay. The story of my first debut on tenor was, well, I worked with the World Saxophone Quartet back in 2006. And the project that they had at the time was the Jimi Hendrix Experience project.
For Saxophone Quartet.
Yes, the World Saxophone Quartet. Yeah, David Murray, Oliver Lake, the late Hammett Blewett, and myself.
Nice.
And what happened is that I met Jamal Adinta Kuma, bass player who was originally with Ornette Coleman's Primetime.
Right.
And he asked me if I would join his band. He had a project going called Coltrane Configurations. So he got this tour going, and I worked with him extensively for about 3 years solid. And he told me in 2009, he said, look, I have an album project I want to do, and I want you on it. And he never said more than that.
Right.
And then he would say, well, look, you know, this is going to happen. And also, and then he mentioned later that, you know, Ornette Coleman's going to be on the album.
Oh, man.
And I was like, are you kidding me? and he says, yes. He says, Ornette Coleman's going to be on the album. And I want you on it as well. And I've got Wolfgang Puschenik. I've got Justin Faulkner. I've got Yoichi Ozeki on piano. And he'll be on bass. And I was like, oh my gosh. I says, and at the time, I was playing alto.
So polite. Like, oh my gosh.
I know. It's crazy. At the time, I was playing alto, baritone, and soprano.
Right.
So there was no mention of tenor. And then it came to around January 2010. And he said to me, Jamal Adin calls me up from the States, and he said, look, this project's going ahead, so be ready. And I says, okay, so what instrument do you want me on? And he says, well, it's not alto, because Ornette Coleman is going to be on alto. And I thought,
what a great sentence to be on the end.
I know. And I says, well, tenor, do you want me on baritone or soprano? He says, no. He says, I want you on tenor. I says, Jamal, I don't play tenor. You know, I don't even own one. He says, well, get one.
amazing.
he says, well, get one because you're on the session. And I was like, are you kidding me? So basically, I had to get borrow an instrument, you know, because I didn't even have a tenor at the moment, you know, at that time. So I borrowed a tenor, and I started practicing. I started doing everything I can just to get the sound of this instrument to sound like my other horns, you know. And And I would say to Jamal Adin, you know, can you send some music? And he's, yeah, don't worry. I'll send some music. Up to this day, I've never seen the music.
Well, you're still waiting for it.
No. I had to go there and memorize it, you know. But when I got to New York, I was so nervous, you know, because the rehearsal was at Ornette Coleman's house. So we had to go to his house to rehearse, his loft apartment in Manhattan, and we rehearsed, and I remember being so nervous because I had to borrow a tenor in New York because for some reason I couldn't get my instrument over there, so
right.
I had to borrow
to
one over there.
Right.
Yeah. you know, they ask all sorts of questions.
Yeah,
and you know, I just didn't want to anything to ruin this trip. So,
yeah.
You know, I borrowed one out there and we did the rehearsals and memorized the tunes and we went into the studio and cut this one take album. It's called For the Love of Ornette by Jamal Adin Tacuma. And it was an amazing experience. So being in the right place at the right time always happens for me, you know,
wow.
And that's one of the best experiences, you know, I've had. And, you know, I've had, you know, quite a few others, you know.
Yeah.
Like working with Andrew Hill and working with Sam Rivers, Rivbi, Big Band. Obviously, you know, the World Saxophone Quartet was a big, big plus because I met David Murray when I was 16, actually, you know, when he came to Nottingham to play with his trio.
Well, that's amazing because you'd have only just started playing the sax at that.
Yeah, but obviously I was you know, I was very, very interested in seeing live music as well.
Yeah.
So you know, always in the right place at the right time. Because you know, if I was to trace that back, when I met David Murray, you know, I asked him how can I get to his level, you know, and he says, you know, first of all, he asked me my name. And he says, oh, that's a good name. and he said, you know, well, look, you know, he says, you just got to practice, kid. Just keep practicing, you know, and I'll look out for you. And he really meant it because when he came to London in the early part of the 90s, you know, we met at the Jazz Cafe where I was playing with Gary Crosby and doing the jam sessions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And he remembered me. And then he asked me to join his big band. And then, you know, I did the big band for a while. And then he asked me to join the World Saxophone Quartet, you know. And so, you know, meeting all these people and then meeting Jamal Adin through David Murray. So, you know, it's all a kind of a one big plan, isn't it?
Yeah, it's funny that does really happen. That
and it still continues. Still continues. You know, I worked with Abdul Abraham as well for about 5 years.
In
his band.
How was that?
Oh, that was amazing too. That was great. You know, I was solely on baritone for that. For those number of years, but you know, I met some great musicians.
Yeah.
Within that.
Do you do a lot of touring
as well?
In something like that?
Yes. I was back and forth to South Africa and all over Europe, very, very often. Very often. Yeah.
So tell me, what's Ornette Coleman's house like?
Wow, it's like a gallery. It was amazing. It was amazing. You know, he was very, 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 very hospitable and he was very welcoming. He was very open about music and, you know, he talked about music extensively. It was just an amazing experience, something I'll never forget. And, you know, and the great thing is that I got all the pictures to prove it, you know, so... Yeah,
man, that's
and the studio recording, which is out, and the pictures that were taken in the studio.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was just such an amazing experience. You know, these kind of experiences, you know, they kind of give me a certain grounding that, you know, that I'm here for a reason. You know, I picked, or me and music got connected for a reason, and there's a big picture, you know, to just doing gigs and playing. You know, there's something else.
Yeah,
that's what I believe. You know, there's, you know, whether it's like to inspire the next generation, you know, and to help them get a foot on the ladder, you know, because like I said, I work with a lot of young children as well, you know, at the World Heartbeat Academy in Wandsworth and the Julian Joseph Jazz Academy in Hackney. So just working with young musicians is something that really inspires me too.
Are those like the same kids each week that you see?
Yes. Yes, and yes, okay. And this has been going on for about 5 years now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and some of them have gone on to study at Berklee College of Music and the Royal Academy, Guildhall, Trinity, you know, and, you know, these are the next generation. So having a part of that, you know, really, really inspires me too.
Yeah, absolutely. That's amazing to be just in that position to teach people that, you know, are then going to like end up, I guess, like you did with David Murray. Like, you know, the dream is that like they get so good that you can start working with them and you know, you see people go on that whole journey as well.
Yeah, because I really appreciated what David did for me, you know, because he really did help me. You know, I mean, I was just this young kid, you know, that he didn't know, and he really kind of took to me, and he always kept an eye out for me, you know, and I'm really grateful for that, and I know that if someone like David Murray can do that, then yeah, I can do that to the next generation of young musicians that are coming up.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's amazing how many people need someone as well.
Of course. Well, it helps keep this music alive as well. You know, this is music that we play. You know, it's it needs to, because it's an oral tradition, really. Yeah. You know, it's not a theoretical tradition. It's an oral tradition that's been passed on, you know, from the ancestors, and you know, and you know, without me hearing people like Ornette or Charlie Parker, Thelonious Monk, John Coltrane, Duke Ellington, and etc., Charles Mingus, you know, I wouldn't have been able to have developed, because these are the musicians that I used as my stepping stone to get to the level that I was, you know. So yeah. I think it's very important that you use what you've learned and pass it on, you know, and not keep it for yourself, because it's not yours. It's not yours to keep, you know. You have to pass it on and try and help the next generation.
Yeah, that's lovely. It's not yours to keep.
It's not.
You're like borrowing the knowledge, you know.
Yes, yes. Share the knowledge.
Yeah, rented for a short period. So let's talk a bit about your albums.
Yes.
So you have three out under your own name. Is that
four.
True?
Four, yes.
Should have seen four. That coming.
Yes, and done many others, you know. But yeah, four under my own name. Yeah.
So when did you record your first album?
2003.
How actually, did
no,
it
no,
feel?
No, 2004, actually. Yeah, 2004.
Okay.
Beginning of 2004.
Was that something that you always wanted to?
You know what? I never really thought about it. But what happened is that I was doing a concert for the London Jazz Festival, and we were playing the complete works of Monk, Thelonious Monk.
Right.
And there happened to be someone in the audience who owned a record company,
awesome.
You know, Malcolm Mills from Proper Records. He approached me, or, you know, he got in touch with me and asked me if I'd like to record some of the selections of tunes that we were playing of Monk's, and I really thought it was a bit of a joke because no one just says come on record, we'll take care of the rest.
Yeah,
but he was serious, and that album did pretty well.
It's a great cover as well.
Yeah,
it
won the BBC Jazz Award and the Parliamentary Jazz Award, and it was a labor of love that came true, but I never ever thought I'd get to record it, just as I was playing it. So it was great to have that opportunity and to record it with some of the guys that I was performing with at the time.
Yeah, massively. So did you change label for the next albums?
No, I stayed with the same label right until the end.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Yes. Which, what's it called?
Well, they started out as Proper Records. Then they went to, then they had another sister company called Specific Jazz, and now they're called The Last Music Company.
Right, cool.
Yeah, so the my latest album is on The Last Music Company, but it's still, I think it's still, part of Proper Records.
Cool.
Yeah.
And this album, Tony Kofi and the Organization, Point Blank, when was that released?
Last year, August. Yeah.
And the picture, it's another, the album cover's amazing on that as well.
Yeah.
All right, tell us about that album.
That album, well, that project came about when I got a phone call by the guitarist, Simon Fernsby, to come and dep for someone who couldn't make the gig. And at the time, he had his trio, which was, which still is actually, Pete Cater and Pete Whitaker on organ, Pete Cater on drums.
Right.
And they were playing somewhere, and they asked me to come and play. And I says, I was free that Sunday, so I took my my saxophones. I say plural saxophones because my alto at the time was kind of like very, very on shaky ground. I lost a couple of springs, and it was held together with elastic bands. So I decided to take my baritone as a backup.
Yeah.
And what happened was halfway through the first set, just barely made it to the end of the first set, the saxophone lost a couple more springs. So I said to Simon, look, I can't continue with this horn, and if you want me to continue, I can use my baritone, which is in the boot of my car. And he kind of like raised his eyebrows and thought, oh, baritone. Oh. We don't really have we can't really hear that sound. But anyway, and when I went to get it, the audience were like, ooh, baritone, unusual, very unusual. So I assembled it, and we started the second set with me on baritone, and wow, it was almost like a breath of fresh air for everyone, because normally, I use a baritone in a more big bands, ensembles, large ensembles, but not as a lead instrument. So, and that's how it became, Tony Kofi and the Organization, because after that session, they asked me to stay.
Oh, sweet.
At that time it happened, I'd just come back from New York. I remember because, I cleared my diary. I wasn't working for that month. And I'd just come back from New York from recording with Ornette Coleman and Chamality Ndikuma. So, sitting at home and being called for this gig. So that's how this project came about, we decided to, record it and release it last year on the Last Music Company. And yeah, we're doing quite a few concerts and festivals.
Okay,
so at the moment, yeah.
So what else is coming up? What's in the diary in the next couple of months?
Well,
or years, whatever you fancy.
Oh my gosh! Well, what you mean with that project or other
just
projects?
Anything you fancy?
Oh
really?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm doing a project called Portrait of Cannonball, where we're showcasing the music of Cannonball Adderley, or the music that he played, you know,
yeah,
along with his some of his brother's compositions, Nat Adderley. So we're doing that, and it's great because, you know, we get to play these really happy tunes, and I get to really play my first instrument, you know, the alto, which I love, and I get to wail on that, you know. So yeah, doing that, and obviously I'm doing Alina Brzezinska's project.
She was our last guest.
Yes, I heard that. That was very
this
good.
This is like a sequel almost.
It is, isn't it? So yeah, I'm doing her project as well, which we're taking to Australia in a couple of months.
Oh, you know. Sweet! That's awesome.
So that's gonna be amazing. Yeah, you know, she's doing really well. She's really, really doing well with that project. And also, Larry Bartley, who a bass player composer, he's got a new project out, and I'm playing in that as well. It's Larry Bartley Trio featuring Tony Kofi. So I'm doing that and yeah, and a few other things. Yeah, working with Joe Harrop, very good singer. She's showcasing the music of Peggy Lee. So I've been a part of that project for quite a few number of years.
Yeah,
and she's doing quite a few with that. Yeah, so yeah, and I'm going out as like a solo as well. So I go out and do like solo gigs and, you know, have a trio waiting for me there.
Yeah.
Or quartet. I'm working with Dennis Rollins in March. Mm, so cool. Working with his Funky Funk project, you know. So, yeah it's quite a lot going on.
Beautiful.
Know? And, you know, and doing the... teaching of the young musicians at the academy. So
yeah,
I've got a pretty full life.
Yes, yeah. For sure. Well, Tony, thank you so much for making space for the Jazz Podcast amongst
you're welcome.
Incredible, you know, the portfolio career. Yours is really a proper really know that. I like that description.
Come on. I know. You know what? It's not finished yet. There's not finished yet. There's plenty more to do yet. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, man. The pleasure is ours. We're going to end with a tune that I'm actually going to... The Giants.
Oh, Giants. Yeah. Yes. I composed that one for... The Giants, you know, people like Thelonious Monk, Charlie Parker, Duke Ellington. So it was kind of a homage to these great musicians that have inspired me.
Okay. Well, that's amazing.
Yes.
Sick. Well done. Here we are again.
Oh, we're still here.
We're still here. We're not going anywhere. So, before we go, thought we might just pick out a few gigs that are coming up in the very near future. Let's have a look. There's, ooh, 3rd of February, Riverside Arts Centre, Sunbury, Terence Colley Trio with the Convalia String Trio. If you're like me, in the heart of Sunbury on Thames, then you might want to get yourself down to that gig. Vejnina's quartet's playing at Pizza Express on the 5th of February. That's pretty awesome. What else have we got? I mean, there's obviously so much. This could go on all morning. Alice Leggett's playing at the Vortex on the 6th as well. That'll be pretty cool. 5th of February, Kelvin Christian, Twickenham. There's a surprisingly large amount going on in Southwest London. You'd be amazed how much of it, Dan, doesn't involve me.
I'm not surprised,
man. I'm going to see Joshua Redman in a couple of weeks.
Oh, nice. When's that?
That's on the 18th of February. Hey. Oh, supported by Duncan Eagles. Woo! Oh, wow. Duncan. Hello.
Calm down.
That's incredible.
We should get Duncan on the show.
Yeah, we should. All right. Let's do it.
We need to talk about his pudding. He's really into pudding.
Okay.
You spoken to him about pudding?
No, but I want to.
Ask him about his. He likes pudding.
Oh my god, I'm going to text him right now and we're going to talk about the jazz podcast and we're going to talk about pudding. So if he's not coming on in March, then you know he just flat out rejected me.
Yeah, he did a. I can't even remember her name now. Sorry, I haven't had any coffee yet.
Oh god.
No, it's gone.
It's all gone, in which case this show is over, and we'll see you on Friday.
So, fun time.